Mr. Mayfield.
Yes.
Welcome, sir. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us on this Labor Day weekend. Could you tell us a little about yourself, sir, and about the work that you're doing with the union?
Well, my name is Alfonso Mayfield. I'm president of SEIU, Florida Public Services Union. We are a public sector union that represents 16,000 employees in Florida, public sector and some private sector, which includes Head Start, school boards, municipalities, and some transportation.
Wow. That's a lot of responsibilities there. People working to help the public every day. That's great. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you.
Tell me, what's on your mind this Labor Day weekend here in a year when so many people seem intent on breaking unions? Give us some good news, sir.
Well, I don't know about good news. I think we're at a very critical point as it relates to the future of this country. You know, labor, the working class is what built this country. And the expanding middle class is what brought the unmitigated wealth that this country enjoyed for decades, and that's been receding. You know, some of the information that we've been looking at, Pew released a study a while ago that showed that the number of middle class Americans reduced from 61% to 51% since 1970. So it really shows that the country has been sliding backwards due to anti-worker policies. I think that getting the president reelected and getting a working Congress, a functional working Congress elected, are the first two fundamental steps to getting the economy back on track. And also, trying to get work rules in place that will allow people to be able to work, to be able to earn a living wage and be able to take care of their families and send their kids to college, and also spend time with their families, because that's unbelievably important.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, sir. You know, it seems to me that this is an absolutely unprecedented attack on the right to organize, on the right for a living wage. We haven't seen anything in this country like that since literally the beginning of the union movement. Do you see the beginnings of a pushback on this ALEC-funded, Koch brothers-funded attempt to really dismantle the unions?
Well, yes, I think that if you look at some of the work that our union and other organizations, labor and other organizations, have done, like, for example, our Fair Economy Initiative, which focused on closing tax loopholes that mostly benefited the rich but did not benefit the working class. Initiatives like that are really focusing on trying to change not only the narrative but the dynamic to get people back to work, to make sure that services that people rely on every day, the elderly, everyone enjoys parks, everyone enjoys their trash getting picked up, people want clean drinking water, all those things are unbelievably important. So I think that you're starting to see that resurgence. Sometimes things don't change until it gets darkest, but we're trying to keep that from happening until it gets to that point. So I think that we're at the beginning stages of that.
Well, we've seen some action from the Florida government mimicking what happened in Wisconsin, what happened in Ohio, what happened in so many other states. Some of it's been stopped, but some of it continues. I understand they're trying to, since they failed privatizing all the prisons, now they're going after prison medical care. Are you seeing that kind of attack for your union, say, in government buildings, in school facilities? Are you seeing that kind of pushback there as well?
Of course, we're seeing it everywhere, and we're seeing it under false pretenses. You know, there is an often misconception that if something's privatized, then it automatically means that the service is better, and that's completely incorrect. I mean, most of our research has found that the services that our members and other workers do in similar veins, they do a lot more with a lot less, and then there's not the whole point of a profit margin that private corporations look for. They're trying to maximize the profit. Public services and government services exist to better the public and for the public good. But yes, there has been an unmitigated attack across the board. If you look at the history of Florida, since the Republicans took over the legislature, there has been a swift reversal where nonprofits used to fill the landscape providing services. Those nonprofits have been replaced with private corporations that have been focusing on profits. They have not delivered better service. They have delivered significantly less service than those nonprofits. those that are raking in more money and more profits. It's completely ridiculous. And so if you extrapolate that out to the future, we could be, as Americans, spending more for less with less oversight and less accountability.
You know, it seemed to me to be the perfect illustration when they were trying to press for the privatization of the prison, saying, oh, this is going to be wonderful, this is going to be marvelous. You think, wait a minute. You know, there's a very limited number of things that are spent in prisons for the modest maintenance, for the upkeep of the buildings, for the security guards and stuff. And if you got to squeeze a profit out of that too, how is that going to be better service? How is that going to better serve the public? And when the legislators who were promoting this were asked, where's the results? Where can you see this money coming from? How could it possibly be better? They just threw their hands up because facts were not something that they were interested in dealing with.
Right. No, I agree with you 100%. I think the two biggest things that upset me about the whole prison privatization debate was the fact that there was not a clear pathway going through the normal electoral process for it to pass. That's what our democracy is about. So what does the governor do? He tries to stick it in the budget to circumvent the will of the people. That is completely absurd. The other thing was the mandate in the bill that says that the prison population will not drop below a certain level. Well, how can you guarantee that? So there's an extrapolation that goes completely counter-narrative to what government is about and what providing services to the public is about. This is all a kickback to private interests that supported the governor when he ran.
Yep. He was in the medical business, and all of a sudden we needed to start drug testing everybody, only to find that, gee, that was just another unnecessary expenditure. But it did serve his friends in the business, that's for sure.
Exactly.
Right now, are there some negotiations coming up? Does your union do, I know you mentioned schools, is it... I guess it's Southeast Coast based. Does it deal with the county schools in Broward and Dade, or what schools are you guys involved in supporting, sir?
Westwood, we're a little bit more spread out.
Good.
Palm Beach County School District,
uh-huh.
Glades County Schools, Lake County Schools, and Pinellas School District.
You know, it seems amazing to me when you look at schools and how important they are, that so many of these people want to scrape out some kind of extra and think that if we suddenly add a profit motive to this, we're going to get better services. It's insane. I heard one of the Republicans, I'm a little bit further up the coast, I heard one of the Republicans, Gerald Harrell, when they were talking about slashing taxes even more for corporations, giving away new tax benefits for people who buy yachts, for people who buy private planes. And when somebody asked her, how can you continue to cut taxes on corporations and expect there not to be any fallout in public services? And she said, oh, no. We've got this all worked out. You just don't understand. There'll be no loss in services. There'll be no cutbacks in police and fire, hospitals. Nothing will suffer from these tax cuts, which, you know, was just patently absurd.
No, absolutely. I also think, you know, and I think we're finally coming to the end of this lie about this trickle-down voodoo economics that has dominated our politics since the 70s.
Let's hope, sir.
it is an ironic thing when David Koch, one of the major Republican backers, the Koch brothers, who are spending $400 million in this election, he even said that there's a need for the government to raise taxes because we are coming dangerously close to not being able to deliver our standards as a country. That tells a lot. When you have someone like one of the Koch brothers saying that we need to raise taxes, that should be a human cry to everyone.
Well, you know, I remember, and I'm sure you do too, when Buffett made that comment that it's insane that he pays less taxes than his secretary. And, you know, people who pay attention went, oh my God, that's insane. We all kind of had that intuition from just our own knowledge base. But to hear somebody who has the credentials of being rich say that, oh my God. But it seems that knowledge, that awareness has evaporated once again under this barrage of propaganda coming from the Koch brothers and their fellow travelers.
No, I mean, you're absolutely correct. I mean, I always have one question when I hear this myth about the job creators, that, you know, we've had almost 8 years of so-called job creation under the Bush tax cut. So if all these job creators have been created by this gutting of the government and this explosion of the deficit through two wars and these cuts, then where are all the jobs? They aren't there because it is a myth. If companies are going to look for the most efficient way to make money and save money, which means that if they can do the job of three with one, then fine. You give them a tax break, it means that's going to be more money in their pocket. You add on top of that the subsidies that our government gives to industries like the oil industry, and it is a travesty. One of the things I hope that happens after President Obama is reelected, that these tax loopholes that Mitt Romney and others use to park money in the Cayman Islands and all overseas, which is ironic to me that there's someone who is running for President of the United States and is talking about his belief in America is using tax loopholes left and right, including some tax maneuvers like the son of the employer, which has been repudiated over periods of time, that guy is running for president. And also, you know, you look now in Bain Capital, his company is not under investigation for tax fraud.
Oh, come now. You're absolutely right. How can someone who has the kind of patriotism that means he's going to hide his money, how can that be the kind of person that they're looking for leadership?
It's a stark contrast, and I think that's the debate that we have to have as a country. You know, unfortunately, I think that this has to be an ongoing discussion post the election. Hopefully the president will get reelected. Hopefully we will get a better Congress and a better Senate. But this is a discussion that has to move on. What are the competing visions for this country? We go to early 20th century, no labor standards, no standard of living, which is what Mitt Romney is offering, or we work together as a country, as one nation, which is what made this country great, and we put people back to work, and we raise the middle class. That's, you know, the debate at hand.
That's an excellent point, sir. Let me ask you a question. It always seems funny to me that they're always ready to say that the poor have too much, that these people are being overpaid, but it's impolite to say the rich have too much. Isn't that odd?
Right. I mean, when you have millions of kids who go to sleep hungry every night, child poverty and adult poverty is at an all-time high. How can we be having a discussion about the poor having too much?
Well, it's just because they're luxuriating in their poverty.
I guess so. I was the son of a home care worker. I don't know about luxurious when your mom is working 13, 14 hours a day just to put food on the table. I don't know how luxurious is that.
I had the honor, sir, to teach briefly at the Boys and Girls Club in Immokalee. And you know, I felt just a little bit good because I was trying to help out a little bit, but I felt so sad so much of the time when I was there, because working there, working in LaBelle, you see people who are having such difficulty just keeping, you know, shoes on people's feet and food in their tummies. And you know, you see driving through West Palm Beach to this community that couldn't exist without the kind of terrible labor situations we have. You know, it was a scandal in the early 60s when America noticed the plight of the migrants. But you know, and I know that their lives have not gotten easier. Their lives haven't gotten better. The same kind of oppression, the same kind of terrible conditions, they remain. It's a shame. And I remember when it was so easy to say, you know, we all need to pull together, we're all working together. But boy, I'll tell you what, that seems to have been forgotten. The social contract seems to have been shredded somehow. And when I hear these right-wingers say, well, we need to have government so small we can strangle it in a bathtub. Wait a minute. Who's building the roads? Who's maintaining the churches? Who's building the schools? You know, where is the guy who's going to, you know, clean up this building at the end of the day? Who's going to run the courthouse? They just are so selfish. They do not understand. We are a group of people that needs to work together. Tell me, are there any events coming up that we should know about? Are there any union gatherings coming up we should know about?
Well, I'm sure that, you know, that there are many. I actually don't have a list in front of me. But the biggest thing that comes to mind, I think, is registering people to vote. You know, there is a large voting gap in Florida. I think 146,000 identified Republicans have been registered to vote so far, and only 11,000 Democrats. And of course, that is a direct result of the crazy voter registration laws that were passed by this legislature to try to limit people to vote. So the one thing I'm going to say is find somewhere to register to vote, register people at church, register people in your neighborhood. We have to take back our country. And we and the gift, the tool that was given to us by our founding fathers was the ballot box. And that's what we need to use to do it. If you're voting for school board, dog catcher, PTA, whatever, vote responsible people in so we can take this country in the direction it needs to go.
Excellent. Great advice, sir. Let me ask you one final question, if I may. It's a question I like to ask all my guests. You know, we're talking about the economic difficulties people have. I know my own economic situation. I have a small business, and I'm earning less today than I did when I was in my 20s. It's absurd. You know, one of the things I ask, and one of the things I'm always intrigued by, is that given that it's so hard to make ends meet, to have a roof over a family, to raise them, we still constantly find people who take from their lives time, money, resources, and they work to build a better world. What was it in your life, sir, that took you from being just another consumer, just another man who worked every day, to say you had to make time to work on making this a better world for your fellow men and women? What was it in your life, sir, that took you and brought you into the public arena?
Well, I think it was two things. I think it was my mother, who, like I mentioned earlier, was a home care worker in Mississippi, and she was someone who worked all day, and then if she had patients who used to be her patients or who just people in the community, she would go and take care of them off the clock. And that was something that she gave of herself because she cared about seniors and cared about people in the community, and also was her mother's primary caretaker to the day that she died. So that's one of the biggest things. That's something that has always been at the forefront of my mind. And my mother has always taught me that we have a responsibility not only to ourselves, but to the person sitting next to us, whether they are related to us or not. The second thing has been my faith. I mean, I am a Christian, and, you know, there's a lot of debate going on in this country about the role of a Christian. The first thing that Jesus said to me through his teachings was judge not, yet ye be judged, and to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So I've always believed that it is my role as a man of faith to help people and to extend myself in a way that's going to help create a better world, not through judgment, not through trying to legislate morality, but by giving of myself to make the world a better place.
Well, Mr. Mayfield, sir, it has been an honor talking with you, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Keep up the good work. You know, in union we are strong, and without union we are broken and apart. And thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You come back again soon, okay?
Yes, sir.
And happy union. Happy Labor Day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That was Mr. Alphonse Mayfield, who is a leader in the SEIU, both in Florida and internationally as well.